Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. With us this week is Blair Horner, the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. We love Blair Horner. He knows more about state politics than anybody I know. Welcome back, Blair.
Thanks for having me, Alan. And you should get out more and get to meet more people.
So see, there are other people who know anything?
Oh, yes, of course.
My experience is not.
it's the Capital District. You
well, we got Ken Lovett over there at the,
he knows a lot.
Daily News. He knows an awful lot.
Jimmy Vielkind at Politico. He knows a lot. And that Alan Chartok guy. He knows a lot.
And, of course, our own Karen DeWitt.
And Jerry Benjamin.
Jerry Benjamin and I, my oldest friend.
We do the whole show on the list of people that know more than I do.
That's not true. You know the most. Everybody else comes next. Okay, so listen, Blair Horner, scandals continue to rock the state capitol. What is it? Do these guys think that, like buying a new car, you get a piece of paper saying you have a license to steal?
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to wonder if the PCBs in the Hudson had more of an effect than we know. It's incredible what's been happening, and you're right. I mean, you know, the recent scandals include things like the attorney general having to resign for assault. Let's be honest, what it really was, the allegations. The Speaker of the Assembly, former Speaker of the Assembly, being convicted for a second time. And one of the featured players in the scandal that brought down the governor's top aide pled guilty to lying to the investigators.
Yeah, that was the briber as opposed to the bribee, right?
That's right, that's right. In that particular case, sort of complicated is that in that particular case, the individual, the company, hired the governor's former top aide, Joe Prococo's wife, to what was called a low-show job, not no-show, low-show, and essentially Prococo was convicted as that was essentially a bribe. The individual who orchestrated the money to her was found guilty of lying to investigators.
So what's really going on here? I mean, look, you know, I'm so old. I'm as old as dirt. I've been around for a long time. I have watched the way things operate in Albany. I've worked in the state Senate as a consultant and done all of that. People have been getting low-show jobs forever. Hey, my niece, my daughter, my this, right. my that. Nobody goes to jail for that.
Well, they do now. Part of it is, you know, the U.S. attorney, the former U.S. attorney, Preparara, decided to bring a slew of cases against the legislature and the executive and was able to use the powers to indict and before he got fired. And now the office continues to aggressively pursue and convict. So part of it is, I think, you know, the what used to be okay and people look the other way is not okay anymore. Probably wasn't okay in the old days either. Right, because effectively is a gift or a bribe if you're giving relatives low-show jobs in order to get influence with them.
No question.
And so now, you know, they're starting to get hammered for it.
Well, times have changed and somebody gets caught in the crosshairs. So let's go to Shelley Silver, Blair. He was one of the most powerful men in the state. We interviewed him on a regular basis here. What happens to somebody like that?
Well, he's looking, I think, at something like 130 years in the pokey. I mean, that's effective.
Well, he's in his 70s, so.
Yeah. Well, no one I know would serve 130 years, but that's a long time. You know, maybe the bionic future legislator might be able to last that long, but 130 years is a long time. And so it's effectively a life sentence if, in fact, that's what happens.
There are some people who think I'm going to live till 130.
We all hope so, yeah. Particularly all of the staff here at WAMC.
Whatever it is. So, Shelley Silver, but now let's go to Schneiderman. This is an extraordinary story. You have an attorney general. Has it been your experience that the word was around that he was a bit of a carouser for years, and now all of a sudden these women come forward?
Well, I mean, I was not part of his personal network. I did deal with him quite a bit over the years as a state senator, attorney general. Even before he became a state senator, he, as a practicing lawyer, he'd done some pro bono legal work for NYPIRG in bringing some cases against the MTA in New York City for having two sets of books in terms of what they were disclosing to the public on how they were spending their money and in reality what they were spending the money on. So I knew him, but I didn't know him personally. You know, he was single when he was here all the time from being a state senator all the way through being attorney general. And so he did have a reputation certainly of going out. But I don't think, certainly no one I knew ever thought that he was capable of assault.
So this is fascinating because we get guys who get into trouble for sexual things. They get into trouble for stealing. And on the other hand, they are capable sometimes of doing great good with the other hand.
Well, it's inexplicable to me why people do some of the things that they do. And I think to some extent it's, you know, their own hubris, that they just believe that they'll get away with it, that nobody's really watching. In the case of Silver and the former Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos, who's also up for retrial in a month, and I think even some of these other allegations around the Buffalo Billion and the, even the cases that dealt with Joe Prococo, I think people just never thought that they would get caught. And they were right.
And does that mean that they were doing it before, so therefore they think they'll never get caught on this one?
I mean, you saw it with Alan Hevesy, too, where people with a former state comptroller who was convicted and spent some time in the pokey. Once you are able to sort of, you know, stretch the envelope on one particular area, you think you can keep doing it, even though if the acceptable behavior is changing and you're continuing to game the system for your own personal benefit or political benefit, I think that sets people on the wrong path. And I think it's largely due to the fact they don't believe that they'll get caught, that they just assume everyone's in on the game, at least down at the Capitol, and they can do what they want, and there's no consequences to suffer. And until the U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara shows up, they were right.
Now that you've gone and mentioned Preet Bharara's name, let's talk let's talk about the race to succeed Eric Schneiderman as Attorney General. There are a lot of people in it, and there's a lot of betting on this. And people have candidates. The governor has a candidate from his group. The speaker has a candidate who he favors. And then there's Preet Bharara, of course. But New York has a very convoluted way of doing things. There's a political convention, right?
Right.
All you have to do is say There's a political convention.
Correct.
Right.
How about that?
All right. Now, that political convention, if they take anybody who wants to run for attorney general and give them 20% of their votes in that political Democratic convention, they get to run without so-called collecting signatures, right?
Correct.
Okay. So now, I had a friend, an old friend whose father, Eliezer Lipsky, wrote a book called The Kiss of Death. It's one of my favorites, and it's also been made into a movie and all the rest of it. So The Kiss of Death. Now, if the convention makes you their candidate, that could be the kiss of death, couldn't it?
Well, you know, all of this is going to hinge on who's in, right?
Right.
I mean, at a certain level, you can't beat something with nothing. I think one of the reasons why a lot of people that were making noises about trying to get appointed attorney general, just so your listeners know, the attorney general resigns, and under the state constitution, the legislature, through joint ballot, elects a replacement. And some of the people that are being talked about as running for the office chose not to seek this appointment because they didn't want to get tagged as the party boss's attorney general. And given the climate that's happening now, even being designated by the political parties could be a problem. Now, that being said, the Democrat, you know, if it's really, it turns out to be a blue wave and the Democrat is a good candidate, the Republican candidate's going to have a tough climb to take them on. So, again, we don't know how this is all going to play in terms of the candidates. The only one that I've heard that's been announced formally, I think, has been Letitia James, the New York City comptroller.
And Speaker Hastie.
Well, and she agreed not to run on the Working Families Party line.
Ooh, very
bad. At the request of the governor.
That was very bad.
And so that is...
And he didn't want her to run on the Working Families line because they denied it to him and gave it to...
Well, they have endorsed Cynthia Nixon. We'll see what the party convention does. I mean, technically, she's not the nominee until the convention, which is, I think, later this weekend.
Yeah. Talk to me about if Preet Bharara wants to be Attorney General of the state of New York. It's clear he did not put his name before the so-called, in my opinion, phony selection committee. If he wants to, he has to go around the state or his people and collect signatures to get him on the ballot, right?
Unless some political party puts him on the line. So, I mean, you're right. I mean, one of the conventions, I mean, the Republican nominee for governor, or one of the nominees for governor, Mark Molinaro, has urged Preet to run as a Republican. And that they would engineer to help put him on line. So who knows?
A so-called fusion ticket.
Yes. And so Barrara is a Democrat. He's enrolled as a Democrat. So either the Democrats could pick him, the Republicans could pick him. If neither one of those things happen and he wants to run, then he has to circulate petitions. To get into a primary, he has to circulate a certain number of petitions starting on June 5th.
In every county in New York, right?
He has to get, I think, based on the number of congressional districts, I believe right. He has to get a certain number of petitions per congressional district and a total number that pass muster statewide. And if he chose to run as an independent, then he could circulate petitions. In other words, not be in any political party. He'd have to circulate his petitions starting in the middle of July. So the petition process becomes the next thing. If he's interested, and he hasn't said he is, but he hasn't said he ain't.
Very good. Can you remind me who Wilson and Pakula are?
That's right. Well, there's a former state senator, former assembly members. They put together a law that's now affectionately known around the Capitol as to get a Wilson Pakula, as if it's a verb, or I guess a noun in that case, not to be Wilson Pakula'd.
I can't help you there.
Right. And that would mean that if you are in a different political party and that particular party wanted to nominate you, the leadership of the party would have to agree to it. And so in the case of, let's say, for example, this Molinaro-Barrara scenario, which Molinaro brought up, if Barrara wanted to run as a Republican, the leadership of the Republicans would have to grant him access to the nomination through a formal vote.
And this is very important in New York State because, as we have said so many times, AG could mean almost governor.
Aspiring governor.
So this is a place that people move up to the governorship.
They have in recent times, right? There was Spitzer, Cuomo. Prior to that, Bobby Abrams tried for a lot of positions, the former attorney general for four terms, I think, as attorney general. He tried for U.S. Senate. He kept waiting for Mario Cuomo to move from the scene, and he never made it anywhere. Now he's a lobbyist.
Better he should have stayed where he was. No. Okay, so now Cuomo has $31 million that we know of. More's coming in.
Right.
And he has a lot of name recognition, Mario's boy and all the rest of that stuff in New York State.
And a two-term incumbent.
Although he knows, he's told me that himself, that third term is a very rough term
yes.
to run.
There's no evidence that third terms turn out to be a career enhancer. I mean, Mike Bloomberg rewrote the New York City charter, essentially, and to allow himself to run for a third term. And it just hurt him, I think, in terms of
his record. One thing people held against him.
Yeah, I mean, well, that and the fact that it's just very difficult. People get tired of you as an executive after 8 years, and so a third term is very difficult. Pataki's third term was rough. That's why he decided, I think, to pack it in. Mario Cuomo's was very tough, and that's why he probably got beat to run for a fourth. It's hard to do, particularly in the age of, you know, the toxic politics we have now.
Now, into all of this comes the Sex and the City actress Cynthia Nixon. I've had an opportunity to talk to her at some great length, and I find her extraordinarily persuasive. And she's always one step ahead of Andrew Cuomo. For example, she wants freedom to smoke marijuana, right?
Right, that's right. And because she pushed it, that certainly looks like the governor who, you know, for years had to be sort of dragged along to allow marijuana to be used in medicinal circumstances, is now warming up to the opportunity to allow it on a recreational basis. I mean, her argument, as I understand it, is to essentially legalize the use of marijuana deals with a large problem within the criminal justice system, which is the possession of small amounts of marijuana is often the rationale for the arrest of young, not white men in particular, and that puts them into a system that it's hard for them to get out. And it's really not, and you know, the possession of small amounts of marijuana is hardly a crime in terms of, I think, how we all sort of view what happens in society. It tends not to be a violent crime. It tends not to be the kind of thing where people are out getting into fights. So it is, it's sort of a, I think, a throwback to a bygone era where people viewed smoking marijuana as somehow a gateway drug to more horrible things. It may still be that. But given society's, I think, change in views on alcohol, certainly, and on gambling, this seems to fit right in.
Right. Now, okay, so she always tries to stay out in front of him. For example, one of the black marks against Andrew Cuomo, and I have a lot of other things I want to talk to you about, so be short here.
Yes, sir.
One of the things was that he was, by her mind, corrupt. And the fact that she is now promised a Moreland Act Commission, an anti-corruption panel. He founded one and then inexplicably got rid of it. And we all thought it was getting a little too close to home with him.
I mean, those are the reports, right, of what came out. I mean, for your listeners, under the state law, the Moreland Act, the executive has authority to impanel people to look for basically corrupt activities within the government, and they have tremendous powers to do so. Last time around, the governor created one. He can create it for lots of things, by the way. He created one for Superstorm Sandy to see what happened on utility rates, utility impact on Long Island. But also in this case, he set one up to look at corruption. He yanked it back as part of a deal with then Speaker of the Assembly Sheldon Silver and then Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos, both of whom were ultimately convicted of crimes, although one is on retrial. He pulled it back, and it looked like the reports were that they were not doing what they were told. And so Nixon, sort of in a political jujitsu move, argues that for day one, she's going to appoint something like that to sort of root out the corruption that she argues is occurring widespread at the state capitol.
It's a brilliant move.
Yes. And it puts the issue four square in front of the governor. And, you know, right now the governor and the legislative leaders are doing everything humanly possible not to put any oxygen in the room to talk about anti-corruption measures for the end of session, despite all of the corruption that we see almost every day.
Okay, so now I want to go to your famous list, the Blair Horner famous list. We only have about 7 minutes to do it in, so I'll read you some of the ideas that you've put forward and others.
I'll try to stay awake.
Okay, yes. Expand the rule of the state controller to oversee state contracts.
That's right. I mean, since 2011, the governor and the legislative leaders have cut back the power of the controller.
I get the governor, but Tom DiNapoli, the outstanding man in state government right now, he gets out of the assembly. And now the assembly goes along with stripping him of some of his powers? Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
I mean, the argument at the time was the governor wanted to move fast on his economic development programs, particularly of upstate, and that the comptroller was slowing down, would slow down his actions because they're so slow, a bureaucracy, the governor would argue. The comptroller argued at the time, there's no evidence that that's the case, but the governor was, this was right his first year in office, and new governors tend to get a wide berth
sure.
from the legislature in terms of proposals they want to have.
So but now the Buffalo happened. Billions
yes.
are a great source of consternation for many people who think that it is a study in corruption.
Time will tell. We're going to have a trial on it next month, June 11th. Mark your calendars. The theory is give the comptroller the powers necessary to monitor the books. There's a reason why he's a separately elected comptroller.
You
he's
bet.
Not appointed by the governor. The public wants an independent watchdog. Should give him the powers, and that maybe if he's doing that, people will behave differently.
Well, the
when
governor
it comes to contracts.
I'm sorry, Blair. The governor comes along and he says, "Don't worry, I'll get somebody else to monitor."
Yeah, I'll pick someone.
I'll pick somebody who works for me.
That's right.
That's
exactly.
Disgusting. Okay, let's go to closing the LLC loophole.
This looms large in almost all of the scandals that have happened in recent times. Certainly, the big ones. Under New York state law, limited liability companies are treated differently from other businesses. They are allowed to basically make campaign contributions of an enormous amount. What happens is real estate developers in New York City, every parcel of property is organized as a separate limited liability company, which means that every single one of them can give the maximum campaign contribution. No other business has this. And the State Board of Elections, to its discredit, has interpreted the law to mean that limited liability companies should be treated like humans and not other businesses. And so the loophole closure would be to say, these are businesses, let's treat them like businesses. The campaign contribution limit for a corporation is $5,000. The campaign contribution limit for an individual is $150,000. If you multiply that over 70 limited liability companies like Glenwood Management had, they estimated that they donated $10 million in campaign contributions, all orchestrated by one powerful real estate developer in New York City. It's got to change. It's terrible.
It is terrible. And then how about the one that has always appealed to me? You're not allowed to make any money on the outside. You get a salary from the state because there's so much potential for conflict of interest. You can't go work as perhaps a lawyer or somebody else and take money because it's a legal way of bribing you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Congress, the New York City Council, they treat their elected officials as full-time. The executive branch in New York treats its staff as full-time. Now, it may not do it properly, in my opinion, but they do have that standard. And so why should the legislature not have that? And so we think that it reduces the risk of corruption if people are only serving one master, the public.
I couldn't agree with more about that. And then the final one that you've come up with is the establishment of an independent ethics watchdog, one I would think that shouldn't be appointed by the governor.
That's right. I mean, the current Joint Commission on Public Ethics, which was created by this governor, the governor and the legislative leaders basically pick all the commissioners. It's inherently political. The entity that is monitoring the ethics, the people who do it are picked by the people who are being monitored. That's an inherent conflict of interest. The proposals that we'll be advancing, or that we are advancing actually in the legislature, Senator Liz Krueger and Assemblymember Robert Carroll have introduced a constitutional amendment where the judicial branch will pick the majority of the appointments to the new ethics entity. And to us, that makes the most sense. You got to break the connection between the political appointees and who they're monitoring. And this is too big of a deal because other than former U.S. Attorney Preparara, not a whole lot's been happening on this issue at the state level.
I got 2 minutes. I won't give you a minute on each. You decide how you want to use it. Simca Felder and Kathy Hochul go.
Well, Kathy Hochul, Lieutenant Governor, it looks like she's been able to
weather the storm.
Weather the storm again, where there was, it appears to be anyway, at least some effort by the governor to see if he could move her off the ticket and replace it with someone else, like he did with the previous Lieutenant Governor, Bob Duffy. So I think in her particular case, she seems to be on the ticket. The governor said recently that he can't wait to run with her, so that seems to be where things are at. We'll see what happens next. Senator Simca Felder is the king. He is his own island. There are 31 Republicans, 31 Democrats, and then there's Simca.
And who says he's a Democrat but acts like a Republican?
He's enrolled as a Democrat but runs on the Democrat, Republican, and conservative lines, and comes from a district where there's a conservative sort of support. So he says he will sit with whatever conference that gives him the best opportunity to make sure his constituents are happy. So he sits with the Republicans. He's the tiebreaker. We'll see what happens in November. If there is, in fact, big changes in the state Senate, then the one-person swing vote may not be there anymore, but it might. So that's why we have elections. But right now, he's the king from Kings County.
We're out of time. Our guest has been the amazing Blair Horner, the executive director of New York Public Interest Research Group, otherwise known as NYPIRG. Blair, thanks so much for joining us today. We love it when you come by.
Thanks for having me.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.